principles and beliefs. If you benefited from today's program, please show your support with a donation at mccpdx.org and at kboo.fm. You can follow the Muslim Community Center of Portland on Facebook for weekly lectures, videos, and updates. facebook.com/Muslim Community Center of Portland. Pathways is up next, and you can listen to Islamic Point of View here on KBOO each week, Sundays at 8 a.m. Thank you for listening. Have a blessed day. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
KBOO Monday mornings at 9 for the Old Mole Variety Hour, your source for radically democratic news, views, reviews, and interviews, stories of ordinary and extraordinary people working to root down the oppressive institutions of capitalism. That's the Old Mole Variety Hour, Monday mornings at 9.
Hello, and welcome to Pathways, where you are invited to join us for a visit with leaders in personal and cultural transformation. This is Donald Altman sitting in for Pathways host, Paul O'Brien. Being in a relationship, especially as a parent or a partner, is challenging nowadays. Our brains are wired to react quickly to almost anything that is perceived as threatening. And so, instead of listening and taking a compassionate stance, we inadvertently end up escalating the conflict. As parents, it's easy to get trapped in the cycle of blaming and praising instead of courageously connecting with one another in the moment. To help us explore such healing pathways is Dr. Mitch Ablett, a clinical psychologist, author, consultant, and international speaker. As an author, Mitch has written many books, a few of them including The Five Hurdles to Happiness and The Mindful Path to Overcoming Them, The Self-Compassion Deck, Growing Mindful, Helping Your Angry Teen, and From Anger to Action. His latest book is Prizeworthy, How to Meaningfully Connect, Build Character, and Unlock the Potential of Every Child. He also has a new card deck for children, Train Your Mind Like a Ninja. Love that title, by the way. 30 Secrets for Fun, Focus, and Resilience. Mitch's work has appeared in numerous online and print media such as Psychology Today, Mindful Magazine, and Newsweek. His blog posts can be found on the mindful.org and Psychology Today websites. As a private practice psychologist and consultant for over 20 years, Mitch focuses on working with teens, parents, families, career professionals, and organizations. His goal is to help people connect with what he calls the true prizes of the present moment. He also has served as executive director of the Institute for Meditation and Psychotherapy, Well, it's an honor and a pleasure to have Mitch Ablett here with us today. Hello, Mitch, and welcome to the Pathways Show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Donald. I appreciate it.
Well, you know, I wanted to explore your book, Prizeworthy, today, but first I was hoping maybe you'd share a little about your own path to studying mindfulness and working with mindfulness. How did you get to the place you're at now with mindfulness?
I would say I've had kind of a circuitous route into mindfulness. It was when I first came across mindfulness as a concept. I think I was in graduate school eons ago, and a supervisor of mine said, "Hey, you might want to check out this book by this guy, Jon Kabat-Zinn." And I looked at the title, "Wherever You Go, There You Are." Mm-hmm. And I'm like, "What the hell is this?" You know, and I didn't read it for quite a while. And in my training days and in my early practice days, mindfulness to me seemed like new agey hooey. And then it was not anything that was relevant to my work as a clinician. And lo and behold, after years of being in the field, working with pretty acute populations, you know, primarily kids, teens, families, and some, you know, adult acute population work. Yeah, I was getting burned out as my career was just really getting started. And I found myself in a leadership role as a clinical director of a therapeutic program for, you know, at-risk kids. And I felt like I needed to do something about my own state of stress, burnout. And, you know, I was responsible for my staff and all these kids that we were caring for and their parents. So I had heard a talk by Steve Hayes, one of the co-founders of acceptance and commitment therapy, a couple of years prior at a conference in Chicago, and was really excited by the material in ACT. And so much so that I got up from the workshop and went straight to the conference bookstore and bought the 1999 kind of seminal text on ACT. Started reading it, started weaving it into my work as a therapist, and quickly found that unlike the other things I had been trained to do, like cognitive behavioral therapy or psychodynamic intervention, you know, you can't really practice mindfulness intervention with your patients unless you're really practicing it yourself, on yourself. And so
it's so true, isn't it? Yeah.
I've been trained in CBT. I don't think I've ever, you know, intentionally applied CBT, you know, in a very programmatic, comprehensive way with myself. And yet I found myself doing ACT practices with in my own daily life. And then I started a daily meditation practice. So, you know, safe to say I drank the scientific Kool-Aid. Yeah, because I was not only having my own data and my own experience, but I started reading and studying what the literature was increasingly saying. So I was like, this is legit, and it just became more and more what I wanted to do.
And was there something that you experienced in your life, was a turning point where you said, "Hey, this is really kind of profound for me," or can it really shift things in a different direction?
I think you know, it all comes down to moments, you know. That's all we have, you know, that becomes acutely clear as you start to practice, you know, mindfulness, as you meditate. And so there were a number of moments in my professional work that I really started to realize, and not just an intellectual way, even in a very experiential way, that when I got fully present, I actually got out of my own way, and that moment became a we space with the patient. And, you know, I couldn't predict exactly where it would go outcome wise, but that actually seemed to give it its power and its impact. That it was a co-creation.
Yeah, it's a beautiful idea. I love that.
Yeah.
And I've experienced that too in working with people, but just the way you can be present with somebody, and you never really, like our conversation right now, you don't really know, well, what's going to evolve out of it or manifest. And there's something beautiful in that.
Yes, I like that. I agree. You know, I have to say, Donald, it's interesting, even though I scoffed at mindfulness and meditation as a concept or set of methods, the things I was drawn to as a young therapist in training, like I was totally enthralled by Irv Yalom's work when I was in grad school. And I remember that chapter in his group psychotherapy text where he talked about process intervention. And I was like, this is one of the only places I'm reading this kind of way of working with patients, like really being in the here and now and speaking what is happening in the here and now intentionally. And I, you know, I was drawn to that even before I meditated. You know, I was drawn, I had one of my early book ideas that never materialized. And now Amy Cuddy has a best-selling book with the title, which is great. You know, I wanted to write a book on what I call presence. Mm-hmm. And that was before I was really meditating. Yeah, so there was something, I'm not a mystical person, you know, but there were conditions that I think were ripe, mm-hmm. that once I started really showing up to those conditions, my conditioning became less relevant. You know, my, mm-hmm. you know, the learning that I had had, though important as a set of tools, you know, the real power of the work that could happen was really not about Mitchness. It was about, you know, really being present with people.
Yeah, well, that's a great story about how you got drawn into this. And people get drawn to mindfulness in so many different ways. You know, I'd like to talk about your book and the idea of prizing. Yeah. And a lot of people might hear the idea of the term prizing and think it's about, as you mentioned in your book, self-esteem trophies that you give to both teams, right?
Right.
You're praising both the losers and the winner, regardless of the effort someone puts in. And that someone might say, well, that's kind of, you know, killing the competitive edge or whatever.
Yeah.
But you say there's a difference between praising and prizing. And can you explain the difference? And why is prizing more about unlocking our inner possibilities?
Yeah. I think it's, I'm biased, but, you know, it's a crucial distinction. You know, praise is something that once I was doing work with kids, there's a lot of literature around positive praise and the benefits of it for kids, and, you know, being very specific when you're praising kids instead of, you know, praising them for being good, you know, praising them for putting their dishes in the sink. Mm. You know, right? So, you know, specific, and that's all well and good. You know, the issue, and there is literature that points to this, and a lot of this, you know, literature, you know, came out of the lab of people like Carol Dweck and others, you know, and her concept of growth versus fixed mindset in kids, you know, that, you know, when we praise kids in a sense of a whole person, like I just alluded to, like, you know, it, be a good kid, or, you know, you're so creative, you're so smart. Even though that's well-intentioned praise, to praise them as a whole person, it can create a contingency of expectation for kids that they have to be good, they have to be smart, they have to be creative, they have to be charming, you know, whatever, in every situation. Mm-hmm. Thing is, some kids have ADHD, some kids have anxiety issues, they have learning issues, they have a trauma history.
So when they kind of globalize it like that, that fall into a perfectionist trap, huh?
That's right. And then they end up in my office or your office, right, you know, years down the line. Like, why am I not cutting it? I'm mm-hmm. supposed to be the smart kid. I've just dealt with this week. I have all these resources afforded me, and I'm just not doing it because they've bought into what Dweck calls a fixed mindset. I would call it, you know, the praise and blame paradigm versus prizing, which is not about whole person. It's not about outcome. Mm-hmm. It's not about, you know, getting them to do anything, either more of something good or less of something bad. Prizing is all about witnessing and speaking and acting from what is showing up in that child, whatever it is, in a given moment. So it could be that they're in emotional pain. Prizing a kid that's in pain is letting them know, hey, kid, I see that you're in pain. And that matters to me that you're experiencing that and I'm here. If they're doing something, you know, where they're really putting in effort, they're going for it in some way. Prizing is like, hey, I see you showing up to that in this moment. And that matters to me.
And it doesn't have to do, as you say, with the outcome, whether they're reaching a particular goal or not.
It's like there's this razor's edge of what prizing is. And most of us have experienced it, you know, when we were growing up or even into adulthood. It's when somebody just really shows up to you and you feel zero agenda other than them showing up to you. You know, I kind of beat it to death here, but I always use the analogy of when we play peekaboo with a baby.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't care about any outcome other than showing up to that kid. We let go of our self-consciousness of how we might sound going, you know, hey, you know, where's Johnny? Where's Johnny? Peekaboo. You know, and yet what does it do in that moment? It lights up the kid, it lights us up, and it creates a we space. I think we can continue to play prizing peekaboo throughout the lifespan, and people can tell when someone is just showing up to them in the present moment. So to me, it's an important distinction because it's an invitation to the child to show up into that moment, into their felt mental experience. And I always think of the, you know, the work of Abraham Maslow, the hierarchy of needs. You know, kids that are stuck, that are using disruptive behavior, they're doing so because there's some basic human need that has felt threatened to them. And so they've learned to use a behavior to try to get people to attend to some that need for them, or to push off a demand that feels like it's threatening, you know, their need for safety or competence or whatever. So when we view people, view kids that way, it's almost like, you know, we need to emblazon Maslow's hierarchy on them and start to X-ray vision. You know, I call it the prizing mindset. You know, what is the pain point for this child? What is behind this behavior in this moment? And how can I let them know that I see that they are trying to show up, albeit very unskillfully?
Yeah, there was a chapter in your book that kind of caught my attention. You just almost kind of referred to it. It's called Chasing the Tail of Misbehavior.
Yeah.
And I think that's a great title. And it's, you know, it's natural when there's a behavior that's maybe less than ideal that we react to it.
Yes.
And then both people end up reacting and it escalates. So what you're talking about here is how to kind of disengage from that chasing behavior. Can you go into that a little more and maybe talk a little bit about how is that possible? What could we do in that moment?
Yeah. This is kind of the key, you know, and this goes back many years in terms of research, you know, Gerald Patterson's work on coercive cycles between adults and kids. That it's basically a pattern of reinforcement. Kid is escalating, they're tantruming, the parent, you know, the adult is getting agitated. And so the adult starts imposing more demand or threat of punishment, and the kid escalates more. And somebody, it's like a game of chicken, somebody's gonna blink. And either the adult removes the demand, lets the kid have with ice cream or whatever they're tantruming about, which then reinforces the kid for the tantruming, but also the adult just got reinforced because the kid's no longer being a nudge. And so now they feel a little bit better. So they both just got reinforced in this coercive cycle. Mm-hmm. And it's all about conditioning. It's habit formation and it's universal. You know, we all still fall prey to this with our kids, you know, with coworkers. You know, it's just what the brain does.
It's easier to do a habit than to do something new, right?
That's right. Well, the brain wants to go on autopilot.
Yeah.
Prizing is a habit that can compete with the fight, flight, freeze, you know, the kind of the lizard brain of our, you know, that primes us for the habit cycles. And prizing is, you know, it can become a habit where you can intentionally, you know, learn that you've been triggered and then drop in to that moment. And this is where the how of prizing starts to come in, where you, you know, it's beyond like hacks of like, you know, take certain amount of breaths or all that stuff is great, but it becomes a mindset, a habitual mindset that you triggered, drop into what I call presencing. And then start showing up to, and it doesn't take long to do this once you really practice it. What is showing up in me? And let me notice it, let me witness it instead of being it. Go ahead.
Change your relationship with yourself and with your reactions in that moment.
You get to have a seat in the movie theater. It is really like a very, very intense virtual reality movie theater.
Oh, I like that.
one of my favorite movies is The Matrix with Keanu Reeves. Yeah. The first one, not the other ones.
Same here.
yeah. And it's a great film metaphor for what we're talking about, that we're all kind of plugged into a matrix of conditioning. That means that we're a human being with a brain trying to navigate in a world. And yet we have a unique ability to witness our experience without just doing our conditioning. And that's what meditation can, as a practice, can bring you to, which is what I call this prizing process, where you can drop in and be presencing as a verb. And that leads organically in a one beat, two beats to a sense of curiosity as to what's behind the kid's behavior without assuming that you know for certain, because you can never know what someone else's actual inner experience is.
Yeah. Is it ever important to actually physically disengage and then come back? I mean,
absolutely. Part of developing kind of a meta skill is that in this regard, is that you become very aware of that you're in that movie theater and that, oh, I've seen this movie before of me losing my, you know, expletive, and, you know, I know how that plays out. Let me breathe into this and breathe into the sensations that are showing up in me. Let me breathe space around all the word stories and mental pictures showing up that are telling me this kid's being a, you know, nudge on purpose, or this kid's manipulating me or whatever. And let me just bring presence, this kind of a space of presence to it all.
Yeah.
And then you start to be like, you can actually, well, wait a second. What might be behind this kid's behavior? What might matter to them? What might be painful to them? And as soon as and that can become a habit. You can start, you know, that kind of, you know, curiosity, and, you know, I call it, you know, reframing the kid's behavior.
Yeah, that's great.
I think then you're already on a different track. You're already on a different track.
One of the things I liked about your book is very practical, with a lot of tools in the book. So your book's designed for parents, for educators. I mean, so a parent could read this book and then start applying the work.
I think one of the things I found daunting about the mindfulness world or meditation, you know, particularly if you start to do any deep dive into Buddhist psychology, which you don't have to be a Buddhist, but, you know, there's a wealth of, you know, of practice that goes back thousands of years. It can feel so daunting because it seems impossible. You know the whole enlightenment thing is a real mental script. It's impossible, and nor should it be the goal.
But it is
very practical that you can learn to bring more grace you know, spacious grace into moments of parenting or in your, if you are a teacher or professional working with kids.
I love that phrase.
That you can build spacious, a habit of returning.
Yeah. And I love that, that spacious grace. Yeah. What a wonderful idea that is. So,
It's not in my book. It's not in my book. You know, it was actually a
you heard it here.
A word given to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Well, I heard it from a patient this morning.
Oh.
You know, a parent who told me, you know, and I've worked with them for quite a while, that they are learning grace.
Mm.
You know, in their, you know, stuckness with their kid.
Yeah. So. And I think this mindfulness really is about reducing suffering. And I think your book really is like a bullseye going right for that, to reduce that level of suffering and misunderstanding that we sometimes carry that goes through generations.
Yeah.
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 You know, I was wondering,
these things do tend to be intergenerational. Yes.
Yeah. So I wonder if you could maybe guide us in a short meditation practice or something. We're getting nearer the kind of close. We have about 2 or 3 minutes. Is there something you could maybe guide us in? Maybe sure. Something that comes from your book?
Sure, sure. Now, this is a practice that I think is useful, and it's one to keep coming back to because I call it the snapping out of habit loops or snapping awake practice, to just create a pause and an interrupt from those coercive cycles. So, you know, to practice it, you just, you know, for right now, we're just going to do it with eyes closed, but you get good at it, you can do it. You're still interacting with a kid. You know, you just take a moment and stop for just a moment. And then the N is to notice with kind of a microscope what is showing up across your body. Bodily sensations, just kind of scan your body from head to toe and just notice whatever's here and now. Any tension, any clenching, any heat. And you're just going to notice whatever is arising just as it is. And then the A, you're going to allow the energy or the pull or the heat or the tension to just be as it is. For just a moment, give it permission. And then on the next inhale, you're going to intentionally breathe air fully and deeply down into the belly. And exhale that. And then again, and this time when you bring it in, you're penetrating down through all of that sensation and all of the thinking, putting air and space into that knot that is showing up in the now. And exhale that. And if your eyes are closed, you can just open them and just continue noticing and allowing. Prompt the breath in. You don't have to go super deep with it. But the second P is with eyes open. What's possible? What's possible now?
Wonderful. Well, thank you for guiding us through that. And of course, our listeners can replay this and have Mitch guide you through it again. Let's be sure to, first of all, I want to thank you, Mitch. I'd love to talk longer, but there's a lot more we could explore, but we've run out of time.
Sure.
So let's be sure to tell our listeners about your website. It's drmitchablett.com. That's drmitchablett.com. mitchablett.com. And that's where you can learn more about Mitch's work. For those who tuned into the Pathway Show late, this is your host, Donald Altman, author of several books on mindfulness, including my newest, the Simply Mindful Coloring Book, and Simply Mindful, a 7-week course and personal handbook for mindful living. Information about my courses, books, and CDs can be found at my website. That's mindfulpractices.com, M-I-N-D-F-U-L, practices.com. In a second, I'll tell you how you can rewind and replay this interview whenever you want, via the internet or as a free podcast. Today, we've been visiting with author, psychologist, and mindfulness expert, Mitch Ablett. I want to say thank you to all of our listeners for tuning into Pathways, which is broadcast and streamed via KBOO-FM, Sunday mornings at 8:30 USA Pacific Time. Podcasts of today's show, which you can listen to and forward to others, are available for free at divination.com, and that's spelled divination.com, as well as via iTunes and other free podcast servers. This is Donald Altman reminding you to tell your friends about Pathways Radio and podcasts. Thanks again to Mitch Ablett and to all of you listeners for tuning in and being a part of the Pathways conversation. Oh,